Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palate. Let me tell you something right now. If you normally listen to this with your children, I advise you to give them an iPad with some headphones because this is going to be a very grown episode, okay? My guest today, you have to get into this. So my guest today is the first Black person in the United States to be granted a license to make liquor, okay? Weird that in our lifetime, we still have so many firsts of Black people doing things, but nonetheless, here we are. He has taken a drink that really, if you're from the Caribbean, you grew up having sorrel. There's 50 million recipes and ways to make it, but he transformed it into something that is a mainstay in any good cocktail bar and anything. He is also, to date, has given one of the best talks on the parallels and differences between diversity, equity, and inclusion. He is hilarious. If you follow him on Facebook or Instagram, my guest today is Mr. Jackie Summers.
Yo, what's up, girl? How you feel?
I feel fantastic now that we're talking to you. So this season...
And you look good.
Oh, well, thank you. They can't see it, but I have to serve a look when I step out. This is what we do. So this season, I've been trying to center the conversations that I have with my guests based on a theme. And I wanted to say, honestly, when I thought of you, I wanted to say ballsy, right? Because I think you are quite ballsy in everything that you do. But really, at the core of it, I'm going to say audacity. You've had the audacity to challenge the status quo. You had the audacity to center yourself and your community. You've had the audacity to speak up against things that an entire industry has kind of put a muzzle over. So the theme of our discussion today is going to be audacity. That work for you?
I got to tell you straight up, given everything our ancestors had to do in order for us to be here, how do you have the right to not be audacious?
This is absolutely true. We owe it to everything and everyone before us to be audacious in what we do and what we say and how we present. And I am excited for my audience to get a sneak peek into what true audacity means. So let's begin a little bit back. The first time we met was actually at Cork Buzz. And you were leading a panel on diversity, equity, and inclusion.
With the amazing Yannick Benjamin, who's just a dear, dear friend.
Oh my goodness. I cannot wait to have him on. Also, shameless plug. No, not shameless plug. It's our friend. If you haven't been to Contento yet, you need to make your way uptown. Because it's amazing. And it challenged me. I think that up until that point, just because of how I present to the world, I looked at diversity and inclusion through the lens in which it often affected me as a woman, as a Black woman, as, you know, a non-thin woman, as all the things that in my personal experience, I viewed as diversity and inequities and things like that. But having someone like Yannick participate in that discussion, and having a bunch of moms where I did not recognize, I did not center my, I didn't focus my lens on how ableism is a thing, on how moms are discriminated against in particular careers. You know, like, so it was such an eye-opening experience where as we work towards dismantling some of these obstacles that we face daily, we have to be aware of whether or not we're complicit or actively destroying those that don't affect us either. So I want to thank you for that to start.
This is always going to be a nuanced conversation. It is entirely possible to be oppressed and to still be an oppressor.
Yes.
I am a Black man. So in this country, things are always going to be a little tricky. But I'm a able-bodied, heterosexual, cisgendered, And let's not even talk about pretty privilege. That's a real thing too.
That is a thing.
And I skew young looking because Black don't crack.
You look amazing.
Ageism is a real thing.
It is.
Black people, yes, there's discrimination, but Black people are women. Black people are disabled.
Yes.
Black people are moms. Black people are queer. There's all sorts of different ways you can be Black. There's no one way to be Black and to be discriminated against. So if we're going to stand up for ourselves, we're going to stand up for the entire spectrum or not at all.
Yes, yes. And I think that, you know, getting to know you and learning more of your story, it's been incredible to see how that kind of core value that you have in recognizing the world around you and your privileges and disadvantages, it has spilled into everything you do. And it is tremendously inspiring. I want us to go back to, I know that you are one of the people where, honestly, even for me, I'm like, who knew that you could have a whole career drinking? Who knew that that was a thing? So take me back to pre-spirits and pre this industry, Jackie. Like, was it just like, I don't like this job. I want to do something else. And I want to do something I really enjoy.
25 years in corporate America. Well, here's the thing. The generation that preceded us was told, get a good education, get a good job, because that was the only way to get ahead. And the truth of the matter is, that still leaves you at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that you can be extremely good at what you do and never really get ahead, you're always going to be behind the game while you're working for someone else. If you don't own it, it owns you. We have put enough into this country. We have built the economy, literally. We built the infrastructure. We taught the country how to dance. We influenced its linguistic stylings. We gave this country food and booze. We're tired of working for other people. It's time for us to own our own thing.
Yes.
But for me, it took 25 years of working for somebody else and a cancer scare to figure that out.
Oh, and the world is infinitely better than you did. So this is so great to be talking to you now, because you had the audacity to step into a world where there was literally, it wasn't documented at first, right? And then there was nobody making spirits at all that looked like us. So you had the audacity, like, not only am I going to leave this corporate world behind, but I'm going to step into something and into a space and a role that doesn't exist. So talk to us about how you took something so essential to our culture. Like, guys, we're going to get into Jackie's liqueur, which is sorrel, but I'm going to give some context to it. There is no Caribbean country, nowhere. And when I say Caribbean, that includes Guyana, Trinidad, all of the Central American countries that have Caribbean influence. There is no place where there isn't a version of hibiscus made into sorrel. In Belize, it's a Christmas thing that you have. Kids love it till you figure out the adults really love it because they put some alcohol in it and it tastes infinitely better. So when you decided to make this move, how important was it for you? Like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to bring all of me. I'm going to bring my culture. I'm going to bring my traditions. I'm going to bring all of me into this.
So before I answer that, I just want to say, there were people, there were Black people in this country that had import licenses and had licenses to have someone make product for them. Mm. But no one actually had a distilled spirits permit. I'm the first person to do that. So there were a few Black people doing this, but no, literally no one with the permit to make alcohol. So in that sense, I was a first. But not that I was trying to be. It worked out that way. Mm-hmm. As far as why sorrel, like, why would I do anybody else's culture?
Yeah.
My mother's parents came from Barbados. My father's parents came from Nevis and St. Kitts. I'm coconut on both sides. I'm never going to do a gin. I'm never going to do a vodka. I'm never going to do a rum. I'm never going to do a tequila or a mezcal. Why should I not represent my culture? Other people are.
Yeah. In a way, you know, in wine, we love this word terroir. In a way, yeah. The essence of what you made is the terroir of you and of every experience that you've had. So talk us through this, because again, we talk about the way people normally enjoy this is you have to add liquor to it.
Yes.
And you just turned it into a liquor. So talk to us about that.
So if we're going to have a real conversation about this, this goes back 500 years.
Okay.
Hibiscus was known to be a medicinal plant in West Africa. It's full of antioxidants, antimicrobials. It's an antifungal. It's a natural diuretic. It's good for kidney health. It's got more vitamin C than most citrus fruits. It's a natural aphrodisiac.
Damn.
So this was ceremonial and a curative in West Africa 5 centuries ago. And then the slave trade starts and they're stealing bodies from the continent of Africa and stuffing them inside the bottom of ships. And they're taking spices as well. So not just the actual hibiscus flowers, but the knowledge of what they do is traveling alongside these stolen bodies in the bottom of these ships. It ends up in the Caribbean because 95% of the enslaved people who ended up in this country came through the Caribbean. That's where the slave ports were. So it takes root in the Caribbean. British naval officers had a stipend of rum as part of their salary. So they would put a little rum in this tea. You're crossing the ocean. It's taking you weeks and weeks. You don't want to get scurvy. Hibiscus has got more vitamin C than citrus fruits. So they're drinking this stuff to stay healthy, and they're drinking it now just to drink it because it's got rum in it. And it becomes a thing in the Caribbean. Like you said, every island makes it.
Yes.
Every island makes it slightly differently.
Yes.
And depending on where you fell in the spice trade, for example, if you were high up in the spice trade, like Jamaica, you would get a version of hibiscus flowers with cardamom and allspice and ginger and ginger and ginger.
Lots of ginger.
And ginger.
Lots of ginger.
If you were deeper in the spice route, like Trinidad and Tobago, you might get Indonesian influences and East Asian influences like cinnamon.
And
nutmeg and different spices.
Mm.
Every family has a different version of this. But here's where it gets tricky. Because our traditions are oral, nobody wrote down recipes.
Yeah.
People would literally add spices and alcohol until the ancestors said, enough, my child.
Stop.
So again, I was raised on this stuff. My first memories are 5 or 6 years old. Eastern Parkway, West Indian Day Parade. There's floats, there's music, there's costumes, and there's food.
Lots of it.
So I'm discovering my heritage through jerk chicken and doubles and curry goat and sorrel.
Yeah.
So I grew up with this, always made a version of it for friends and family in my kitchen. When it came time to launch my liquor brand, this was what I decided on. But here's the trick. My version is shelf stable. Most sorrel will last a month, maybe 2 months tops in your refrigerator. Sorrel is indefinitely stable. It does not need to be refrigerated. You can open it, close it, come back in a year, it tastes the same.
Wow. So talk to us about how that process, was it just like you just had the idea that there has to be a science, there has to be a way to stabilize this? Or are you just a mad scientist as well?
Well, I'm mad. To be clear, you got to be crazy to do this. I am not a food scientist. I have no background in food chemistry. So the joke I tell at this point is, if you have an idea that you think is so good, no one's ever thought of it before, it's probably a terrible idea. There's probably a reason why no one's done it before. It took 623 failures.
Say that number again for the people that give up after the first time.
I was literally making a batch a day and then figuring out how to torture it. Make a batch, put it in the freezer, leave it out on the deck, leave it in the sun. And the first 500 batches were just garbage. You start to wonder, like, maybe there's a reason no one has done this. Maybe it can't be done. 624 was the version that actually was stable. You can boil it, nuke it, freeze it, open it, close it, come back, use later. It does not break down.
And it's versatile because you can drink it just straight up over the rocks, right? Or I've seen incredible cocktails created with it.
It might be the most versatile mixer of all time. You can mix it with gin, vodka, rum, tequila, scotch, mezcal, seltzer, sparkling wine. But, you know, we go straight to the head.
Yeah, we're not known for mixing many things together. And I think it's such a celebration of the culture because, you know, as we dive into, I think that when we juxtaposition wine and spirits, you know, there's a direct lineage to wine. Like these grapes were here, these people took them here, and this is where they've been for years. But something like a flower that you've taken, you've planted it everywhere. You now have the East Indian spice channels coming through, and nobody throws things together in a pot like Black people. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you get ginger in curry because somebody was making curry and there was a piece of ginger root somewhere. And they're like, you know what? Yep. What happens if we throw this in here? You know, like, and I think that that is the beauty of food culture, of how something can evolve just based on the people that are currently the stewards of it. And I look at, you know, when I think about Sorella, I think about stewardship. I think that you have stewarded an oral tradition, food history, and a people, and bottled it and stabilized it.
Well, see, this is the beauty is I know that this story is not my story. Mm. It is a story of perseverance that has gone on for literally hundreds of years. It is proof that our culture could not be erased.
Yeah. And it's important. You know, I think that you've participated and judged and you've had a proverbial seat at many tables, right? And for some people, it seems like that, not people, not necessarily just Black people, but it, for all marginalized groups, it seemed like for a while that was the goal, right? Like just to get a seat at the table. But you showed up at the table like, listen to me, if y'all put me at this table, honey, I'm gonna turn this table out continuously and I'm gonna invite my friends and we're gonna have a good time at this table.
So there's a couple things about the table. The first thing is, if you have a seat at the table and you can't pull out seats for your friends, you don't got a seat. You're a mm-hmm. token.
Yes.
So my whole deal is, where once a seat at someone else's table was okay, we can make our own tables now. We don't need y'all. We're good. Thank you. That window's closed.
Yeah. I think that we're at this evolutionary point in food, wine, and culture where that is happening, right? Where even in food, like, you're not going to tell me that a chicken leg or jerk chicken is not a refined technique that should be celebrated. You should learn the history of it. This has preserved an entire nation.
But wait, do you know the story behind jerk chicken?
I do, but I want everyone to know it. Talk about
it. So this is beautiful. Escaped enslaved Africans in the nation of Jamaica hit the mountains, right? They end up hooking up with natives who had not yet been killed. The escaped Africans have spices from Africa. The indigenous people have a cooking technique that allows you to preserve meat. They combine the spices with this cooking technique. And literally the whole purpose is we're trying not to get recaptured by the British.
So we got to hide this.
We need to stay on the move.
Yeah.
So we can't have a fire that shows our location. We got to have food that we can take with us. It's not going to go bad after a few weeks because there's no refrigeration. Jerk chicken is a story of perseverance.
Yes. And that's the funny thing. I wrote something the other day where I was like, please stop showing me jerk adjacent chicken, right? Like that is grilled chicken with a sauce on it. That's not jerk chicken. Jerking is a technique that actually like helped people escape to their own freedom. So I think that it's learning those stories and valuing it for what it is, right? Like if you don't like spice, and I think that that's something, and it's why I appreciate how eloquently you drag people, to be honest, where we have to get out of this thing where because you don't like something, you feel like it needs to be watered down, right? Like I've heard people ordered, can I have the jerk chicken not spicy? No.
No.
You actually can't.
No.
It's not possible.
No. What you want is chicken. You don't want jerk chicken.
You don't want jerk chicken. You want grilled chicken over pimento wood. That's not jerk chicken.
Right.
That's something different. And that's okay, right? Like if I don't want tomato sauce, or I don't want pasta with eggs in it, I can't go to somebody's Nona's house and say, I don't want that though. No, don't use that. What, like, what is that?
Yo, someone asked me last year how they could be a better ally to Black people. And my response was, yo, use seasonings.
I mean, I try seasonings. I mean, there was a recent article that came out in the Washington Post. I can't believe they published the nonsense, but it was this man talking about how much he doesn't like curry. Like, first of all, you're crazy. Curry is delicious, you psychopath.
Thank you.
But there was so much wrong with it. One, curry has traveled from Southeast Asia around the world.
And to be clear, Southeast Asians aren't the one that drug curry all over the world.
No.
That was people who literally colonized their nation, stealing curry and selling it. Y'all made all this money on spice, trillions of dollars on the spice trade. but now you don't like it?
And now you don't like it. That is the most bizarre thing. And it's a problem. I mean, his words were a problem. But the fact that, like, we're not rejecting free speech, but it's like, why give voice to this? Why give platform to this? Like, I can't find an article with a minority saying, if y'all don't stop just using salt, pepper, lemon, and parsley on food and put shit on it, please. Right? We don't write about that. Nobody discredits any, you know, the French have no spicy food. None whatsoever. So no. In wine, I always make this argument, like when we talk about wine, if you describe something, oh, it's spicy, like a jalapeno is a bell pepper with a little bit of black pepper on it, right?
That's not,
but that doesn't even fall into the remote realm of spicy to somebody with my palate. Why should a population and a culture with no spicy food, no indigenous chilies, no anything like that exist in your cuisine? It's not a part of your culinary thumbprint. So why would you ever be able to say what is spicy and what isn't? Like, if ever there was a moment to sit this one out, it would be that time. You know what I mean?
But there's a whole segment of the population that feels everyone's entitled to their opinion. Listen, opinions, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to talk about this. You can keep it to yourself.
And that's the thing. I feel like when you have privilege and position, sometimes some opinions need to stay in your head. And that doesn't, I want to be clear. This is a really important point to everyone that's listening. This is not relegated to just race and gender, right? You can have a socioeconomic status where maybe you shut up about this because you have privilege and access that somebody else just doesn't. So you literally cannot conceptualize what someone else is experiencing. So you shut the F up. It's okay to shut up sometimes. And I say this as someone that talks a lot.
If you don't have ovaries, keep your opinion to yourself about women's healthcare.
There's that. There's that. And so it's so interesting as we dive into, you know, so much of spirits. And I think that, you know, with wine, it's a little more nuanced than that. Yes, we can talk about like, well, Spanish wine, the Moors took shit everywhere, right? I love the wines of Spain, but there is no Spanish wine history without the Moors, right?
Yep.
So it's a longer road backwards to map it out. But when it comes to spirits, when we think about rum, like I actually really struggle with drinking rums not produced by Black people. Because you know...
Which is most of them.
Right. It's almost all. Like, shout out to 10 to 1. Right?
Yo.
That is my house rum now because it's delicious and it's Black owned.
Shout out to Equiano too.
Yes. But other than that, I don't even think that people realize that like rum was completely colonized. You know, like nations like Haiti and a lot of the... There's no reason that these islands should be poor. When there are families that are multi-generational millionaires.
Billionaires.
On slavery.
Yeah.
You know, like Planter's Punch. Plantation Punch. We really have to rename that drink. It's problematic.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started.
But you have so many people that will go, well, what's the big deal? Well.
The big deal is y'all literally, not metaphorically, literally took the ideas and the labor and the land and the resources of an entire people and monetize that culture while depriving them of their basic rights.
To this day.
To this day. We're done with this. We're done with this.
And it's. I think that to your credit, I think that, the way you read people, because sometimes I think that it takes courage to constantly have these kinds of conversations because you have people that really just want to take a very kumbaya approach to things and say, you know, it's fine. Like, all right, we'll acknowledge that, but let's just get along now. Like, you want to drink Plantation Punch together now? Like, how do we not talk about these roots, especially in an industry where winemaking, spirit distillery, it's tied to tradition. So why do we want to separate out this one tradition and how it came about from everything else?
I mean, let's be very clear about this. We cannot just get along if getting along is predicated on the continuance of my oppression.
Yes.
I do not care about your comfort. My liberty and my freedom and my right not just to exist, but to thrive is more important than anything that makes you uncomfortable. Sorry about that.
Our existence is one big uncomfortable moment after the other. And it's fine. And I think it's healthy.
But not for us. I'm good. You're good.
Oh, I'm wonderful.
Other people's discomfort is their issue.
I mean, if someone has to be uncomfortable and I have a choice, it can't be me.
Yeah.
That's just the way. But I think that, you know, like, it's so, you are really a pillar and an example of really how, so like, this word authenticity is such a buzzword now, right? Where on one side, if you don't present and speak and sound a certain way, you're not being authentic enough, which is foolishness because it denies that we're not a monolith, right? Like, right. I am authentically Black the way I am, the way I speak, the way I sound. I am authentically right. A woman, whatever the hell it is that that means. Because
right.
Somebody could ask me tomorrow, do you feel like a woman? I don't know. I feel the way I feel every day.
Right.
I don't have anything to reconcile in that. Does that mean I feel like a woman? I don't know. So I'm not going to tell anyone else how they
right.
feel. Right. I'm just
right.
going to leave that alone and accept that I want you to live in a world where you feel comfortable being you. That's it. Without any question, without any justification, I'd like to live in the same world.
As long as that's not predicated on my continued oppression.
No, then that's it. Like, you can't step on me to level up yourself. That won't work.
Yep.
That won't work at all. And, you know, this is an interesting part because this gets into kind of the psyche and emotional wellness that can be exhausting. Not
yes.
only doing this work within the context of wine and spirits and beverage and hospitality, but just in general. And I love, and when, before we wrap this up and people will know if they, I mean, they should be following you already. What are they doing? But if they don't know, I want them to follow you because I live for your focus and vulnerability on wellness, on self-care, on self-love. And I know that a lot of that was predicated on your house care. So talk to us a little bit about how in your audaciousness, you still make time and space to take care of yourself because this work is laborious, it's heavy, it's exhausting, and it can weigh on you.
The work is laborious, but there's a short story I wrote where I am praying to my ancestors to tell them how bad the world is and asking them for help, and they laugh at me.
Mm.
Because my parents were born during the height of Jim Crow. And my grandparents were immigrants who had just gotten to this country with lint in their pockets. And my great-great-grandparents were born enslaved.
Mm.
I only get to do what I do because I stand on the mountain of sacrifice of those who came before me. And it is incumbent on me to make the mountain high for those who come after. I don't complain about how hard things are. It's so much easier for me because of what everyone who came before me did. And
yes.
I am going to make it easier for those who come after. I might not enjoy the shade of the trees I plant, but I sure will plant them.
Yeah, a word. Listen, somebody pass the collection plate around because that, and I think that, you know, like, There's a reconciliation that happens in that like, listen, like I'm gonna be who I am, and somebody isn't going to have the argument, isn't gonna have to feel like they need to be the mouthpiece, like they need to be the disruptor, like they need to be the rebel because I was, and
right.
So the space is neutralized now when you enter it. That all you need to do is enter it and shine, but I challenge other people to recognize, like, I'm being fueled by trauma, right? It is the trauma of everyone that existed before me that fuels me to do better so that the next generation, when I'm gone from this earth, maybe it's one or 10 things off a checklist of 100 that they don't have to worry about. That is so true.
But here's the beauty is, it is true that we carry epigenetic memory. But we did not just inherit trauma from our ancestors. We got their strength. We got their perseverance.
Amen.
We got neuroflexibility.
Mm.
We are the most neurodiverse people on the planet. There's no situation you can put us in where we're not going to figure out not just how to survive, but how to thrive. They gave us garbage, literal garbage to eat.
Yeah.
And we made it delicious.
We made it everything. I'm like, brazen, it's slaves.
We like, oh, you're gonna give us garbage? We got this dial.
Got it.
Oxtail used to be thrown out.
Can we make oxtail affordable again? Why is oxtail $50,000 a pound? I'm very upset about this.
Because it's popular to gentrify slavery food.
I don't like that.
There's a whole generation of people that can only feel good about themselves if they're trying to equate themselves with struggle. Listen, my struggle food was real. I saw an article last month about how saltines and butter are the new hot food.
What? New hot food? That was a struggle snack.
Saltines and butter was dinner when I was a kid.
That was, but all of these things, you know, canned fish across Europe, like canned fish, Portugal and those places, they're delicacies. Like, they're delicious. I'm like, West Indian kids done had canned mackerel and sardines. I used to get annoyed when my grandmother had that for breakfast. I hate both of those things. But I think that there's beauty in it. And I think that, you know, it puts business owners, which is why I think that what you've done is so brilliant. Because, you know, you think about the Jamaican family that has a restaurant, right?
Right.
Chicken breast isn't really a thing. You wouldn't chop up chicken breast and put it anything, right? We eat legs and thighs. We're a dark meat people, right? But in order for your restaurant to thrive, you have to make your food blander and more palatable to meet the clientele that you're trying to serve. So I just challenge everyone, and I do this myself. Listen, I have eaten some Indian and some other dishes where I'm like, okay, I am choosing violence today because my mouth, I love spice, but my mouth is on fire right now. It would never dawn on me to say to someone, you need to make this a little less spicy so that I can eat it. That is never how I would approach it. And so I challenge everyone the same way I do with wines, to do the same thing with foods as a respect of the culture and the people that have been crafting it. Enjoy it as is. You don't need to, like, you can honor it, you can be inspired by it, you can be innovative from it, but at its core and at its soul, honor things, ingredients, people, for what they are.
So here is something that is very true. The recipe for sorrel, which we're now making in thousands of gallon batches, is identical to my 2-gallon recipe from my kitchen, scaled up times 1,000. And literally, at all times at the distillery, there is a 2-gallon batch that we compare to the 10,000-gallon batch to make sure that it tastes the same.
Wow.
Because my people are petty. And if it did not taste real, every Caribbean would be like, what's that? What that supposed to be?
What is boy doing here? Mm-hmm. It's true. We're a discerning, talented people, aren't we?
Listen, as it is, every Caribbean person looks me up and down when I tell them what I make. No matter where they are or where they come from, they look at me like, what's that?
That's such a nostalgic thing. Like, you talked about it. That is something that you remember from childhood. You get real hyped when you're like 13, 14, and one of your uncles slip you a little bit of it. They got some rum in it. And then you're like, ooh, this is what we were doing.
But you don't have French people who look their nose up you and go, oh, you make wine? We make wine at home. You don't get Mexican people who go, oh, you make mezcal? We make mezcal at home.
Right.
You don't get Japanese people who go, oh, you make soju, we make soju at home. It's only Caribbeans that go, oh, sorrel, I made it at home. Yes, you do, but you don't make sorrel.
You don't make it like this. It's different. And you know what? I think that there's a pridefulness in Caribbean culture that people cling to sometimes in unhealthy and sort of rude ways. But I think that pride, it's so interesting that across the Caribbean, like, you have different countries. First of all, I think we're one of the few regions of the world that instantly knows everybody's flag. Like, I didn't realize that that wasn't a common thing, that everybody knows everyone's flag. You know that here it's Palau, here it's this, here it's that. So I think that there's a dichotomy there that's beautiful, and that we understand that this is, in every way, this is a culture that we can't let go of, like, no matter where we go. That's why there's carnival in Germany, carnival in London, carnival everywhere you go. Because I think that as a collective, we can't let go of it. And it's also fun. If you don't live anywhere where there are Caribbean people, we can be friends virtually. But if you live somewhere where there's a large Caribbean community, go hang out with them. It is the most fun you will have in your life.
why would we not celebrate all that we have survived and figured out how to achieve?
Yes.
We have persevered. We are literally the descendants of the Africans you couldn't kill and the indigenous you couldn't eradicate.
Yes. And it's an inclusive culture. Like we very much recognize the diaspora. In any of these nations, you can go there and see people that look like the UN. You know, there are white Jamaicans. There are Asian-looking Trinidadians. You know what I mean? Like, and so I think that as an example of like how something can be exceptionally diverse and exceptionally universal simultaneously, Caribbean culture and sorrel, translated to sorrel, is so much a representation of that, of a heart of Caribbean culture bottled and preserved. And I think it's amazing. I am so, so proud of you. Congratulations again. We have to stop and congratulate you again.
I sincerely believe that there is a place in the culinary firmament where this beverage belongs. It's been around for centuries. It is literally a perseverance in a bottle. It is all of our health, all of our curatives, all of our ceremony that we can drink.
Yes.
And again, as you said, I am just the steward of the story. It's been on for centuries. It's my job to show gratitude for all that's been done for me to do this. If you make sure the story is here 100, 200, 500 years from now, I want for this to be historical, for folks to look back 100 years and go, what do you mean there was only one black guy making liquor back in the 20th century? How was that a thing? Now we all do this.
Yep.
We need to make it so that the generations that come after, we need to live like we're future ancestors.
Pioneer, you are. All right, so this is the part of, I mean, guys, it is paining me that this episode, the clock is ticking down because I could literally talk to Jackie all day. So at this point in the show, though, we have a little flash round. I'm going to ask you some questions. You cannot labor on the question. Just give me the first answer that comes out, okay?
You got it.
All right. Everything goes amazingly well. Everything that you've planned for the day, everything that you could have imagined the day went perfect beyond expectations. What do you drink to celebrate?
Sorrel.
Obviously. All right. The day's complete shit. Nothing has gone right. Everything that can possibly go wrong has gone wrong. What do you drink?
Sorrel.
Spirit that if you could never drink it again, you would lose no sleep over it completely disappearing from the earth.
Gin.
What? Wow. I was taking a sip of coffee, guys. I almost spit it out. You don't like gin at all?
Gin loosens my already tenuous grip on my aggressive nature.
Okay, fair point. Received. Okay. Fair point. Received. Okay, food that you eat. What's the comfort meal? Same thing.
Oxtail.
Oh, man. I didn't even need to say it because that's it. Okay, aside from sorrel, let's go with a culinary thing then. Somebody is listening to this episode and going, shit, you know what? I looked at Caribbean food as Jamaican food and that's it. I want to explore and try something different. What other nation's dish would you encourage somebody to try if they are not familiar with Caribbean food outside of Jamaica? Which, ironically, guys, is probably unique in itself.
Jamaicans make the best jerk everything. But if you want great Caribbean food, Trinidad and Tobago and Guyana. They're so underrated. But they're not bombastic people like the Jamaicans. God bless them. 1, 2, 3. Go get some doubles.
Get doubles.
Go get some shrimp roti. Go get some boneless goat roti. Make sure it's boneless, though, because you will break a tooth.
You will crack a tooth, but I will still say to get it with bones. I don't make boneless curry. If I make you curry goat, there's going to be bones in it. Eat carefully. But I would agree with that completely. And, you know, if you live in New York, there is literally now you have Little Italy, you have Chinatown, there's Little Caribbean. Go to Brooklyn. Go to Ali's. Now, let me say something about my people. Everything sells out. Don't look at a menu because half the shit is not there.
Yo, half my life I've seen conch roti at Ali's. I've never had conch roti.
I've never had
Ali's.
It.
Never.
I've never had it. I'm going to sleep outside one day so I can actually try it.
Oh, and here's a warning for the people who are going to a Caribbean restaurant for the first time. If you walk in and the person gives you attitude, you're in the right place.
You're in the right place. If they're too friendly, leave.
The food's terrible.
The food's not going to be good. If you walk in and get out, hi, welcome, you should leave. It's not going to be... It's not going to be good food.
If someone look you up and down, suck their teeth at you, and then they take 5 minutes to ask you what you want,
that
you're
food
in the right place.
Is about to change your life. And no, it's not a rude people. I don't know why it is that way. It just is that way. Like, they're not being rude to you. It's not personal. They're just like that. But it will be the best food of your life.
Jamaicans cook like they run. They don't think they're better than you. They know it.
They know it. But yes, I would agree with you completely that if you've never had Trinidadian food or Guyanese food, if your benchmark is only Jamaican food, I absolutely think, well, you can come over and I'll figure out how to make you some Belizean food because that's just delicious too. But yes, I would agree with you on that one. Jackie, first, let's tell everybody where they can follow you on social media. And more importantly, if they are in New York City or wherever else, where can they get their hands on a bottle of Sorrel?
So the first thing you want to do is you want to go to SorrelOfficial.com, S-O-R-E-L official.com, and sign up for updates. If you want to catch me on social media, again, on IG, Sorrel Official. My personal IG where the fun stuff happens is The Liquortarian, T-H-E-L-I-Q-U-O-R-T-A-R-I-A-N. That's my mom's word because she didn't want to call her kids alcoholics. Y'all a bunch of Liquortarians. Okay, mom, have another drink.
Mom branded you.
My Facebook is Jack from BKLN. I'll tell you right now, if you send a friend request, it's probably not going to get approved. But if you follow, there's going to be fun stuff there and there's going to be some serious stuff there too. Like, I try to have real conversations. I try to make sure that we're talking about the stuff that usually goes silent because we cannot heal what we don't discuss.
Amen. Amen. Oh my God, this was such a great episode. Jackie, thank you so, so much for being here.
We got to do this again.
Listen, I'm ready for us to do live podcasting from things. Like, that is the next level because
Let's make it happen.
I love talking to you. There is so much wisdom in there and wrapped up in humor and wit and finesse. I just love it. Guys, I hope that you absolutely love listening to this episode as much as I love recording it. Get yourself a bottle of Sorrel. Tag me and Jackie in the picture after you listen to this episode and you go and get yours. And until next week, bye-bye.